Welcome back to The Usual Suspects, the usual crew here in studio, and a very special guest joining us right now. Saturday, HBO's World Championship Boxing returns. It's the mecca of boxing, Madison Square Garden, where the building will host undefeated champion Terrence Crawford, taking on southpaw and Olympic gold medalist Felix Diaz in a showdown for the World Junior Welterweight Championship. We bring in now ESPN's Max Kellerman, also of HBO Sports, who will be on that broadcast doing that fight on Saturday night. Max, a pleasure to have you join us here on ESPN 97.5. First question right off the bat, can you break down the fight for us? What are we looking at and what are we looking for?
You know, someone asked me recently to give him a pound for pound list on Twitter, and in fact, it was Michael Carter Williams, and I did. And, you know, everyone has different criteria for pound, but I said, as Jim Lampley and I sometimes talk about this, you can talk about who's proven it based on their resume, or you can talk about who you think it really is, who's really the best in the world at the moment, even if they haven't proven it against the top opponents because for whatever reason, either they've been avoided or they just haven't made the fights yet. And when you do it the second way that I talked about just now, like, who do you really think is the best pound for pound? The only guy in the world who I look at and I go, he's even better than Crawford, is a guy, Vasily Lomachenko. But Terrence Crawford is right there among the very best pound for pound fighters in the world. So it's a pleasure to watch him fight, period. And it's tough to find opponents that can give him any burn, you know, any run. But Felix Diaz, he's a heavy underdog, but Felix Diaz is an Olympic gold medalist. He only has one loss. That was a tough loss to Lamont Peterson, who's an excellent contender for a number of years. And Felix Diaz, a southpaw, is as good an opponent as you're going to find in a fight like this for Terrence Crawford. So I'm looking forward to it.
We're speaking to Max Kellerman here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN97.5.com. Speaking of Felix Diaz, I saw somewhere that he said that he had the experience to defeat a Terrence Crawford. And in my opinion, I think he has 20 total fights. 10 fights, in my opinion, is a big difference. I mean, is that him just being confident, or is that realistic? 20 fights is enough?
Well, you know, it really depends who those fights come against. He hasn't fought a who's who in boxing. As I said, Peterson is his best opponent, and he lost to Peterson. He has a couple of other names, kind of quasi-names in boxing that he's beaten, one of them close. But it's not just the professional experience in Diaz's case. He was a decorated amateur. And the way boxing works, if you have like a ham and egger, meaning like a guy fighting in 4 and 6 round fights who's not that great, didn't have an extensive background in the amateurs, versus an Olympic gold medalist who's won other international tournaments or medaled in other international tournaments, the amateur will wind up being the better fighter. So Diaz, because of his decorated amateur background on the international scene, which is the highest level, there's nothing bigger than an Olympic gold medal, which he scored in an upset. Because of that, the 20 pro fights means a little more than it would, compared to another fighter. That said, he has not exactly fought a who's who in the pros so far. Crawford is not only the taller fighter, the better boxer, but is the more experienced pro.
How much is the height difference going to matter? I think he's 5'5", Felix Diaz. I mean, is that the size difference? Is that going to make a difference at all?
And Crawford can use his size, his height, his reach. But if Diaz finds his way inside and can make it like a rough-and-tumble fight, Crawford's ready to get down like that, too. I don't think that Diaz wins that kind of fight either. I don't think Diaz wins, period. But that gives him his best chance, you would think.
Max, while we got you, I want to get to something because I'm an avid fan and viewer of First Take, and I know you and Stephen A. go back and forth on a lot of topics, but the one that's obviously hot right now in the city of Houston is James Harden, and sometimes people can't get to a TV to catch your take. Can you kind of just give us a synopsis of your take on the collapse of James Harden in the playoffs and what this means for him and the Rockets going forward?
I like Harden a lot. He is getting the most of his ability on the offensive end. I think I like the pairing of Harden and D'Antoni before the season started, because when D'Antoni gets a primary ball handler who buys in, he can really do something. He can inflate the assets around that ball handler if they're shooters and make the team look better than actually is. The 50 games to be in the playoffs, you'll advance maybe one round, sometimes two. You'll be exciting. Your highlights will be on SportsCenter and stuff because there'll be lots of threes and dunks because it's all about high percentage shots, especially the threes. He doubled down on exploiting that shot this year. Thought he didn't take it far enough with Phoenix and all that. So I liked what they did. And because he plays at that pace, he doesn't really care about defense, which is perfect for James Harden. So I liked the pairing a lot. But when Harden was bragging about how he doesn't take off games and yada, 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 well, maybe he should have. Maybe he should have done the LeBron and rested a bit because he seemed out of gas late. So there's that. There's also the fact that Harden has choked in the past. I take no pleasure in saying he's choked in the past. I wish that he will, going forward, get that right. But we saw it as the sixth man with Oklahoma City in the finals. We've seen it in previous playoff games. Not that anyone's perfect. Everyone, almost everyone has, and maybe not Michael Jordan, has bad playoff games. And we saw it again in critical moments with the Rockets. Now, Jalen Rose pointed out he was on the floor and refused help getting up off the floor when they wanted to get him off the floor. Maybe there's something more than meets the eye going on that team. Maybe, you know, between Harden and his teammates. But I have another theory on top of all that, guys. And if I haven't talked too much already, I'll ask you if you want to hear it.
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
I think that James Harden, you know, his game is based on an exploitation, a manipulation of the rules. Like, for example, once upon a time in baseball, you know, why does the walks rule, why does it exist? Is it so players can draw walks? No. It's to incentivize pitchers to throw the ball to the hitter in a way that he can hit it so he can have a game, right? You can have a ball game. But over time, as is always the case, enterprising people look to manipulate and exploit rules in ways that they were not intended. So batters started trying to squeeze out walks because they want to get to first base for free, right? Have a free pass. And that's a valuable thing to do. And, of course, the result is it slows up the game. It makes it more boring, et cetera. Same thing with the free throws, like with going to the foul line, fouls in basketball. They're there so the defensive player doesn't hack at the offensive player, but enterprising offensive players have, of course, manipulated that, and they've exploited it in such a way that they draw the defense into the foul. And then they throw up their arms as though they're going to take a shot, and then the ref is there going, well, theoretically, I can't prove he wasn't going to take a shot, so I'll give him three free throws. It slows up the game, it's ugly to watch, and it rewards players who are creative. You know, they're clever. They show ingenuity in certain ways, but it's really not the way the rule is intended to be used, and it makes me suspicious of the player because, Harden, if you play in the NBA, you're one of the greatest athletes who's ever lived. It's almost not an exaggeration to say everyone in the world who can play in the NBA does. There's huge financial incentive. You're not getting tackled or punched. You know, it's a lot of fun. You're idolized, all those things, and it's fun to play basketball. So when I say the following, I don't mean it literally, because literally, Harden's one of the greatest athletes who've ever lived. He's a superstar in the NBA. But by the standards of NBA superstars, he's not very athletic. He doesn't have upper echelon athletic ability. You know, he's not the fastest like John Wall or Russell Westbrook. He doesn't jump like Blake Griffin. You know, he's not that. He doesn't even shoot the ball like Steph Curry or someone like that. He's like a 35, 36% three-point shooter this year. Of course, he took a lot of them, but still. So he relies on the Euro step, on drawing the offense into committing fouls, those kind of things. And to me, that's a bit like a guess hitter who has his way with third and fourth starters in baseball, but come the playoffs, he's facing aces and deuces, and he can't do as much with the hard stuff. I think players like Harden, at least my theory is that I'm toying with, is that players like Harden, when they get deep in the playoffs, when they don't have that upper echelon athletic ability and have to rely on the manipulation of the rules, they don't succeed like more athletic players. Partly because the game is officiated differently, partly because they're up against other clever players who are also elite athletically. So that's my whole rap on Harden and the Rockets.
Max, I couldn't agree more with you because I've said this over and over again, having worked with the Rockets for 20-some years, and the bottom line is, in the playoffs, they call the game differently. They're not going to make those calls. So with that being said, and what you've just said, I then further the question to say, is James Harden the kind of guy that can lead this franchise to a championship? And what would it take for him to get the Rockets to be a contender for a title?
Okay, let me say this now. I hope I'm wrong about the following statement. I don't root against a player like James Harden. even though he was a high draft pick, I think he's outkicked his coverage, right? Like he's outstripped expectations, good for him. And now new expectations are set. I wonder if he's not a dead-end player. And by dead-end player, I mean, and like Carmelo Anthony is like this, and there are many other excellent players like this, where you'd almost rather have a lesser player, because the lesser player may be an easier path to a championship. By dead-end player, I mean this. They're so good that you're going to have to give them a max contract. You're going to have to essentially give them a third of all your salary cap resources, right? And you're also they're also going to be a very high-usage player. And they're likely to be your primary option on offense. So because Harden's too good not to be. But as a result, then the question becomes, is that player good enough to be the primary option on offense on a championship team? Particularly in Harden's case, he doesn't play defense. And I think in his case, the answer is no. I never, when I'm watching him in the regular season, as great as he is, feel as though he's actually as good as, well, clearly not LeBron James. Let's put LeBron James aside. Not as good as Kawhi Leonard, not as good as Steph Curry, not as good as Russell Westbrook. In fact, Harden and Westbrook played on the same team, and there's a reason one guy started and one guy came off the bench. So I don't think that, given his deficiencies on the defensive end, that he is good enough to be the best player on a championship team. The question then becomes, can he be one of the two best players on a championship team? Can you have a 1A to his 1B, let's say, on a championship team? I think the answer to that is yes. But that 1A is going to have to be a prime Kristaps Porzingis or Karl-Anthony Towns or Anthony Davis or a healthy Joel Embiid in a couple years. It's going to have to be a unicorn-style, inside-outside, all-way threat, seven-footer type. Like, it's not just going to be your run-of-the-mill excellent big. It would have to be something truly special, or maybe another wing that he could play off well. You know, one of the issues with the Thunder is that they found that when Harden was on the floor with Westbrook and Durant, they actually functioned less efficiently than when the three of them weren't playing together. So he's a very tricky player, I think, to win a championship with, and a dangerous one, in the sense that he's a tantalizing player to want to try to win a championship with because he is so good. You know, you're almost better off with a lesser player who doesn't trick you into the same kind of trap, right? Who you maybe not don't even have to pay the same way. So that's my wrap in terms of his ability to lead a team to a championship. I don't see it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you look, they tried the dynamic duo with Howard. It didn't work, but they definitely need to try it again and find someone that can coexist with and be a type A personality with James Harden. So great insight there, Max. We appreciate it. So before we let we go, we want to remind everybody, HBO's World Championship Boxing returning this Saturday night from the Garden in New York. Undefeated champion Terrence Crawford taking on gold medalist Felix Diaz. It's a showdown for the World Junior Welterweight Championship. So we've got Max Kellerman on that broadcast. We've got him on First Take with Stephen A. Smith. Check your local listings. Make sure you keep up with Max. And Max, we appreciate the time. I know you're busy, so thanks for stopping in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Max Kellerman with some great insight right there, not only on the fight, but more importantly on James Harden and the chances for our Rockets to win a title with him in the future.